Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Growing with Content podcast. I'm your host, Victor Eduo, the lead content marketing strategist at VC.studio. And today with me, we have Geoff Robas. He's the co-founder of Outsetter. So immediately, I had the opportunity to bring Geoff on the show. I was very excited to so that he will share how he has, you know, used content in one way or another to grow the company. So without further ado, Geoff, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please, a little about you and your background.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Victor. So my name is Geoff Roberts. I'm the founder of a SaaS startup called Outsetter, as you mentioned. I live in San Diego, California, and my background personally is in marketing, although I wear many hats as a founder today. But really, since 2010, I have worked with B2B SaaS startups, helping them grow, figuring out what they need to grow. And in all of the companies that I've been most successful at, the primary engine for growth was content. So this seemed like a great place to chat about some of the things I've done.
Thank you so much for that wonderful intro. So let's start with the first phase of the show. So Geoff, if you don't mind, like, pull the curtains on a very unique example of when you use content to influence the growth of either Outsetter or one of the companies you have worked with in the past.
Sure. I'll give you two examples that I'll probably bounce back and forth between as we go through this conversation, because they are complete opposites of one another. In both cases, they were businesses that grew on the back of content, but the strategy could not have been more different. And I think that's a really important message as people consider content. Everybody sort of, you know, looks at the big content creators and what they do and tries to replicate those formulas. But you need to sort of assess the company and the situation that you're walking into and make sure that the content strategy fits. So the two companies I'll kind of refer back to. The first one is called Buildium. It's the word build and then IUM.com. That's a company that I first started my career at. I led the marketing team there for 5 years. And then the second company I'll refer to is Outsetter, my startup today. I've now been working on that for 7 years. And in either case, I was responsible for figuring out what the content strategy should be. But content was really a means of driving growth, driving leads to these businesses. So the difference I want to illustrate is at Buildium, the content that we generated was very clearly for SEO. There was a market that sort of hadn't fully developed yet. It's a real estate software product that's commonly referred to now as property management software. And at the time I got to Buildium, the phrase property management software didn't really mean anything to anybody. It wasn't an understood category the way that email marketing or CRM software might be. So we recognized that content could help us rank number one for that very specific keyword, property management software, and we could really play a role in sort of defining that category. And almost all of the effort that we put into that business went to ranking that single keyword, property management software, in the number one position in Google. And we were able to do that effectively. Just having that number one position drove something like 40% of our revenue over the course of the company's history. I think that's even true at the company today. So it was very singularly focused on content to drive search results. Today at Outsetter, I am doing the absolute opposite, honestly to a fault to some extent. We do not really target any keywords with our content. And the reason for that is Outsetter is a all-in-one platform to run a SaaS or membership type business. And it brings together a bunch of categories of tools that are really well understood. It's things like it's a billing system, it's a CRM system, it's an email tool. And if you look at those keywords, it would be a huge waste of our time and energy and effort to try to rank in a top position for the keyword CRM, for example. It's just not going to happen. We're not HubSpot. We're not Salesforce. We could spend years trying to climb those rankings and it would be wasted effort. So at Outsetter, our content strategy has been almost singularly focused on me just writing about my experience as a founder. And that is something that a lot of companies do to a fault. I see a lot of founders writing about their entrepreneurial experience, but their audiences aren't other entrepreneurs. So it might be therapeutic for them. It might, you know, just be something they want to do anyways, but it's not driving new customer acquisition. In our case, our audience is other founders like myself. So I found that just writing about my experience is content that's interesting to them. They learn about our product in the course of reading my content, and they actually become customers. It is our single biggest customer acquisition strategy. So on one hand, you have Buildium, where content is 100% search focused. On the other hand, you have Outsetta, where there's zero focus on search, and it's really just me sharing my sort of entrepreneurial journey.
Okay. Now, very interesting, kind of lays a foundation for me to ask some very, very pointed questions. Thank you very much for sharing that. So now I get it, like there are two different scenarios. And like you said, you imagine trying to rank for CRM, only to rank for CRM. And then people come in and realize that, oh, you're not even a full-fledged CRM solution. And they start explaining how, okay, you just solve this very niche need that has to do with CRM or billing system, as the case may be. What I would love you to dive into is, at what point, like, when did you realize, or what made you realize that, you know, trying to pursue this thing from the SEO perspective wasn't going to, you know, generate results? What did you see? What were some signals you saw that made you make that decision?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was really just the process of when we started the company, sitting down and saying, okay, what is our SEO strategy? What are the keywords that we're going to target? And when we look at the features of the product, as I said, the CRM, email marketing, you know, billing system, those are some of the most competitive keywords you can find in general. And we're a small bootstrap team. We kind of looked at that and said, you know what, we could spin our wheels for a long time trying to rank for those keywords. So the conversation then became, okay, are there sort of longer tail keywords or other, not necessarily long tail keywords, but other sort of less popular keywords that are still a direct descriptor of what we do that we could target? And we do have some of those. We are increasingly targeting the keyword membership software, which is sort of an established category, but certainly much less popular than CRM or email or billing systems. And there's other things like a SaaS starter kit, for example, is a very sort of specific keyword, or SaaS boilerplate is another one. These are good descriptors of what we do, but the search volume for them is very, very low. So yeah, it's not to say that we didn't look for those keywords and that those keywords don't exist and that they can't bring us business, but we didn't see a big opportunity in keyword targeting to grow this company where we thought this is a battle that we can sort of fight and win. And what I did see was an opportunity to share my entrepreneurial experience with a lot of other founders. I have a writing background. It comes natural to me to write about my experience. It's how I think most clearly. It's how I express myself best. So I said, you know what, rather than thinking about content as an investment in search, let's think about it as an investment in our brand. And I'm going to spend a lot of effort and time writing long form content and making it as good as I possibly can. And the bet that I made was, if I do this over a sustained period of time, people are going to notice that the content is good and they're going to read when I publish something new. And Outsetta today by no means has a large audience. I would say we have a small but very invested audience. Right now, as we sit here today, I haven't published anything on our blog in probably 2 months. There's times where I'll publish multiple articles a week. There's times where I'll go 2 months and not publish something. And I think that's okay. I try to publish something when I have something to say. And I've tried really hard to earn the trust of our audience in the sense that I'm not just going to be publishing an article every week for the sake of doing it. I'm going to try to publish something when I feel like I have something that deserves your attention. So it's not a particularly regimented approach to creating content. It's not, you know, necessarily the best thing to do in terms of driving as much traffic as possible to the site. But I do think that most people who are familiar with Outsetta would say, I discovered you through your content, and it was your content that sort of first caught my attention.
Oh, like very, very, super, super interesting. And, you know, I think you kind of have an upper hand here because, like you said, writing comes natural to you, which by extension means that creating content comes natural to you. So it was just a matter of putting in the effort, knowing that, okay, this is going to take you time and so much work, but, you know, it is worth it, and maybe over a long period of time coming. Now, it's difficult because in this case, we can't really say this is the strategy you applied. Like you said, this is there's no strategy here. And it kind of takes me back to one of your content pieces I read recently on your blog, when you were talking about processes and how too much processes and frameworks, you know, they're not really helpful and all that. So now let's look at this now from an operational point of view and say, okay, like suppose a founder listening to you now and say, okay, I know how to write, but I have not been writing and all that. Like, were there specific things you did? Like, you know, you could write about anything. You could share any experiences you choose to share. Even though there's no strategy to this, you wanted it to kind of resonate with people who at the end of the day would have interest in what you were selling out. Mm-hmm. Was there anything you did to ensure that, you know, while you can write about anything and share any experiences, you are sharing experiences that would make sense for some other people who would, you know, read that content and see the need to want to explore out.
Yeah, good question. Two things here. The first thing I want to say that I think is a point a lot of people miss is this is what works for me when it comes to writing. I do not work well. If you said, Jeff, you have to publish content on a weekly cadence and just get something out the door and sort of force yourself with a weekly deadline, that does not work well for me. I've tried that in the past. It does not create my best work. I don't need that sort of kick in the butt to take action. I need to feel like I have something worth writing about to take action. And there are people that are the opposite. I would even say most people probably fall into the other camp where that regular rigor of writing or podcasting or creating videos or whatever it is, they get better through the reps, and they need that sort of discipline to build the habit of creating content. And that's totally fine. I think more people need to just figure out sort of what works for them. But that aside, getting to your point, like how do we make sure the content resonates with our audience? This is something that I think I found something that works, but I'm also falling into a common pitfall of all content creators. So what I have found that works, and I've probably over-indexed in this direction, is actually sharing our struggles and my struggles as a founder. I think that the reason that has struck a chord is it's really hard to build a SaaS business. There's a lot of founders out there that have been grinding on ideas for a long time, making very little money. They're frustrated. They see all these success stories in social media. And the fact that I share as openly as I do about the things that we're struggling with and the challenges that we've had, there's a sense of authenticity there. I have been sort of accused of like maybe over-indexing on sharing our failures and not sharing our wins enough. So that is certainly something I'm thinking about. But I think it just kind of breaks down the audience because they're saying, if nothing else, what Jeff is saying here is true. Like there's nothing beneficial to me writing about the struggles in our business other than people say, okay, he's actually living this experience. He's in the thick of it. He's somebody that I can relate to as I build my own startup. The pitfall that I have definitely fallen into, and I'm trying to get better about this, is oftentimes I don't think that I have that much that's interesting to share with other people. Occasionally, like we'll be doing something at Outsetta and I'm like, this is an interesting topic. I haven't seen this written about a lot. We've learned something about this and I'll publish on it. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on day to day that for me is kind of commonplace because I've been working in SaaS startups for 12, 13 years at this point, and I don't view myself as having any sort of particularly interesting knowledge on the topic. But you forget that there's people that are behind you in their career and their experience that want to learn those things that you've already learned. And I think every creator sort of falls for this. They probably have more information and more to say that people would care about than they give themselves credit for. So I'm trying to address that blind spot. And when I do go periods like I have right now, where I haven't written in a while, say to myself, there's stuff going on in the context of this business that might not seem new and scintillating and super exciting to you, but is there something here that I can still pass along that's going to be useful to others? So I think the strength so far has been just like sharing our failures authentically. And I struggle like everybody else with maybe sharing as much as I could.
Okay, so if I'm going to summarize that, it's like saying what has been the watchword for you has been authenticity. Trying to share your struggles as much as you can, because you know everybody loves to share their wins. Everybody loves to share how you know they've increased customers from this to this, and try to you know highlight their highlight reel. But you notice that what has struck a chord for you and what has invited people to want to listen more and maybe dig in and go and check out Outsetter has been the fact that you're very vulnerable. If I'm going to use that word, like you're vulnerable enough to be able to say those things that, you know, people would think would paint them in a negative light. So like, thank you so much for that. So let's look at, you know, with this new DVD, because if you've been creating all this content and you know you weren't seeing any results, I want to assume that maybe you would have started thinking of, okay, maybe we should go back to the playbook I used at BuildYour. Maybe okay, we can't rank for CRM. Okay, we can't rank for billing software. But you know, if me sharing all my experiences has not been driving any results for us, maybe we should go back to the main playbook or the known playbook and pick a page out of it. But in this case, you didn't do that. And I want to believe there were some signs you saw that made you think, okay, I think this is a path we should continue treading. Like, do you have anything there that you, what did you see? Like, what were some initial signals and signs that made you feel like, okay, I think we are onto something here. So let's keep going.
Yeah. So I would say a couple things on this front. The first one is one of my sort of core beliefs around marketing in general is consistency wins. You can pick almost any channel that you want. I really believe this. It's not necessarily true in every market and every business, but I'm generally of the belief you could pick almost any marketing strategy you want. It could be email marketing, it could be paid ads, it could be content, it could be SEO, it could be affiliates. And if you just focus on it and continually optimize it over the course of years, you can make it work for you. I have always believed that. It is very, very hard for people who haven't seen that sort of prove itself to be true to work on something for multiple years without seeing results. But oftentimes people just give up too quickly. And I think the reason I was comfortable doing this is at Outsetter is because of my experience at Buildium. Yes, we got that number one ranking for the keyword property management software, but it's something that we worked on every day for the 5 years that I worked there. And it took us a couple of years to even get to that position, despite there not being a lot of competition around that keyword. So some of it is certainly blind belief. And I know that is hard to sort of just accept it at face value, but I do think you need a little bit of that. And you do need to lean into the idea that consistency is what's going to help you win. Outside of that, I would say at Outsetter, we really didn't see much in terms of content driving customer acquisition for probably close to 2 years, 18 months to 2 years before we really started to see signs that, you know, most of the traffic from our website was coming from content that was converting into paid customers, and all those sorts of things. So I think what I look for before that, and even what I try to use as sort of our North Star metric today, is not a term that I phrased. It's a guy named Jay Akunzo who sort of came up with this term, but he calls it unsolicited response rate, or URR. And the idea is if you publish something, again, a video, a podcast, a newsletter, a blog article, whatever it is, how many people directly reach out to you and reference that thing that you published and say, I learned something from this, or this is a great post, or thing, you know, whatever it might be. That is sort of a leading indicator that your content is striking a chord, that your content is resonating. And I saw that very quickly with the content that I started publishing at Outset. Even when our audience was tiny and I had a list of 100 people that I was sending blog articles to, if 4 or 5 reached out after I hit publish, that's a pretty good sign that some people are getting value out of it. And if, you know, the next article spikes up to 10, you know that that article resonated that much more deeply than the one you published before. So that has always been sort of the leading indicator that I look for. And that kind of tells me, okay, I'm onto something. And if you know that you're resonating in that way, I think it's only a matter of time before your audience starts to snowball, before the content starts to become more popular, before you start to see customers actually coming from the content.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. So 2 things from that. Number one is consistency. And like you said, blind faith is not... It's not a term that many founders and marketing leaders would want to embrace today, especially when they have to do less. They have to produce more with less, like having blind faith that like this is going to work and, you know, we're just going to keep doing it until eventually we see the results. Definitely not a conversation that most founders want. And I can say that sitting from my position where, you know, I almost every week or every 2 weeks, I have to talk to a founder or I have to talk to a marketing leader and some kind of make them see how the content we are producing would eventually bring the results that we are bringing. So it took you like 18 months, like you said, to actually start seeing traction. And one thing you've mentioned here that I think I'm hearing for the first time when it has to do with content is unsolicited response rate, where people are reaching out to you and they are enjoying the content. So now, to make sense of that unsolicited response rate, and to considering the fact that this content wasn't SEO content where you say, hey, someone found it from search and all that, I'm curious to know, how were you able to distribute this content like so that the people who were giving those response rates that gave you those initial signal were like, okay, people are finding it. How are we able to distribute this content?
Yeah, so this is another sort of key point, and another common pitfall, I think, is particularly in a company like Outsetta, we're a 6-person team today. We're small, we're bootstrapped. Marketing is about trade-offs, right? There's a million different things I could be doing. I could have a podcast. I could have a YouTube station. I could have all these different things. But with limited resources, you sort of need to make your bet. And the bet that I made was written blog content, which today is not the probably the sexiest answer to that question, but it reflects my skill set and how I'm most comfortable. So that's what I sort of chose to do. In terms of distributing that content, we don't have like a miracle recipe either, to be honest with you. We certainly, you know, we published it on a blog on our website and we spent some time making that blog look attractive and those sorts of things. When I do publish a new article, we have an email list that I send the content out to that drives people to our website. Certainly do a little bit of SEO optimization of the articles, meaning I don't choose target keywords for the vast majority of the articles that we write, but I make sure they have clear title tags and meta descriptions and, you know, good headings that are easy to skim and things like that, that are just sort of basic on-page SEO tactics that are worthwhile with anything that you publish. And then anything that we publish, we post on social media too. So another sort of benefit of the particular market that we're in right now is we sell to bootstrap founders of SaaS companies, and I'm a bootstrap founder of a SaaS company. So I understand where people like myself hang out, the Slack groups, the communities, the social channels. It's really not hard to find our audience. So it's a matter of simply making that content really good, making sure we have a perspective that's interesting, and then going to those places and just sharing what we wrote. I know that's a underwhelming answer, but that's really all that we do. There's nothing spectacular in terms of how we distribute.
I think while it may not sound spectacular to you, I think so many people listening, like you said, so many people listening to this would they know that that is spectacular, because you know there are so many people that are so buried in this mindset of, okay, our content needs to rank and all that, and they forget that where their audience are, like you said, in niche communities, like where bootstrap founders are trying to listen to other people like them, you know, they are in Slack groups and all that. So many people don't consider the fact that they need to make the content so very, very relevant for the people in those small communities, so that if they go there, it's better you create content that reaches 10 bootstrap founders who could end up using Outsetter than creating content that goes viral and reaches a million people who just read the content and say, oh yeah, that makes sense, and then they move on with their life. So I think even though it may not be spectacular, I like the fact that you say the first thing you do when it comes to distribution is that ensuring that the content itself resonates with the people you want to read it. Then you do a bit of optimization to ensure that the title tags. I think those are distribution things that people wouldn't call distribution things, because if the title tag, like you said, doesn't make me want to stop my scrolling wherever I see the content and read, then it's almost like I'm going to scroll past it and move to the next thing. So thank you very much. Now, the last question in this case study part of the show is, are there any hard numbers you want to share? Like, are there hard numbers? I'm thinking there will be difficult hard numbers to kind of point directly to content in this case, but like, is there anything like that?
I don't have any hard numbers in terms of like, we've got a huge audience, or we drove X amount of revenue with content or anything like that. I can tell you about 70% of our customers are driven by content. It is far and away our biggest acquisition channel. After that, we have like some integration partners, you know, other companies like Webflow and Stripe that our product integrates with, and we have listings on their site that drive us traffic. We do some affiliate stuff. But it is a content driven company, and you know, the number of our customers driven by content has only increased to some extent today. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm saying, okay, we need to diversify this a little bit. There's not a whole lot behind that other than just knowing we're so reliant on content. We should be kind of pushing on other channels as we grow. But that's probably the metric I can give you, the 70% today, that's going to be most interesting. And I do want to, if it's okay, just sort of circle back on something that you sort of alluded to but didn't ask directly, which is, I said, you know, I felt comfortable devoting so much time and energy to content largely based on blind faith. And it took 18 months or 2 years to really recognize the impact of that. And where you were going with this was kind of like, you know, if you're a content agency and you're not a founder that's working for themselves, it's really hard to get a marketing leader or a CEO or a founder to sort of agree to, we're going to go create content based on blind faith for 18 months or 2 years. I've been in that situation before. I've worked for content agencies. I've been the internal marketer trying to sell content projects, you know, up to a CEO. I completely understand that challenge. And I think for anyone in that position, you also have to understand the challenge of the CEO or the founder or the person at the top. It is really hard for that person to say, okay, we're going to invest time and energy into this thing for 18 months or 2 years before we see anything from it. If it's not a founder or a CEO that has a marketing background, you're going to be hard pressed to find anybody that feels that way. I just wanted to share kind of how I would think about that. What I encourage people to do in that situation is have a really frank conversation with the founder around what they're hoping to get out of content. And it can be many different things, right? There are the business like Buildium where it was very cut and dry. We are trying to get search traffic that drives revenue. And if you walked into a business like Outsetta and you didn't see that immediate opportunity to do that, you probably shouldn't be trying to sell them, you know, SEO driven content like that. You're setting yourself up to lose. It could be you say, Mr. CEO, Mr. Founder, would you be comfortable writing content as an investment in your brand? Do you want to become known for this high quality content, even if it is less directly attributable to growth? Is there value in the business there? And some CEOs and founders will say yes, others will say no. One that I really like sort of in that direction is just this idea of thought leadership content. So if you're a CEO or you're a founder and you're trying to interact more on social media, you're trying to help your company with marketing, one of the benefits of having a stable of content is if people ask questions online, you can have content at the ready that answers their question. And it might not be, you know, directly attributable to customer acquisition, but this is something that is hugely beneficial for me today. And this is something that you can do and you can deliver value very, very quickly. So quick example, then we'll move on. Right now, a topic that is difficult to understand in the world of SaaS startups is global sales tax compliance. Nobody knows like what they're supposed to do around global sales tax and how to remit it and how to calculate it. So I wrote this crazy long article. It's like 20 pages, everything I've learned about global sales tax compliance. And every single day now, I see people on Twitter asking questions about global sales tax compliance. And I just have a link that I can add into the conversation where it's like, I've thought about this in depth. Here's what I think. And it immediately inserts myself and my company into that conversation. And those are things that don't take 18 months or 2 years. And maybe that's not what the CEO or founder of every company is looking for, but that is a way that you can immediately provide value. And I think that's a great sort of foot in the door as you sell content marketing services.
Like if you like this, that's going to be very super helpful to anybody listening because, you know, when you, and that's going to segue to the next, part of the show, but I just want to pick out some things that you said that is very, very super relevant because, you know, when people look at blog content and the whole SEO content writing, of course, you know, there's still a place for SEO writing. I don't like to push it out of the door and say, okay, it's not, it doesn't work any longer. But like you said, it's still very important for founders and at least leaders or executives of companies to have their thoughts fleshed out in a guide that somebody can immerse themselves in and actually read because, you know, some questions, like you said, you're not going to answer it over, say, a LinkedIn post. And you're not going to copy the URL of a LinkedIn post and be plugging into conversations like that post, you know, and having your thoughts on very important matters fleshed out in a blog post, whether it's written by you or you edited the content for fact, making it factual and it's clear and all that, it's still very, very, very important. So thank you for segueing back to that. So we've come to the first part. We've come to the end of the first part of the show. And even though it's not like the typical like case study type where, you know, the person, our guest goes on and share, you know, how they actually did it, the strategy they use, the volume of content they produce and all that. This was, like I said, this episode is an outlier because we are talking to somebody who is not just a founder, but is wearing so many hats and then content is just one of the things he has to do. So, Geoff, thank you so much for what you've shared so far. Super relevant to any SaaS founder, especially those bootstrapping out there. Now, I want to go to the next part of the show, which is, you know, how you are actually creating content today. You know, from what you've said so far, I can imagine how you pick ideas. Like if you come across something that needs to be answered and it's a way of plugging yourself and Outsetta into the conversation, you're definitely going to pen it down and write it. Then secondly, if you have an experience with running the product that you think would be relevant to bootstrap founders like you, you're going to pen it down to write it. Now, this is the part where we want you to unpack your content creating flow to a bootstrap founder out there who is trying to pull this part and they want to start writing. Maybe they've been pushing all these things to the side. The first question I want to ask you is, how do you prioritize ideas? Because there are so many things you could write on. Like, how do you prioritize ideas and say, okay, if I have five things I'm going to write on and I have just today to write one content piece, and for the next 2 months, like in your case, you're not going to have the time to write another content piece. Yeah. How do you decide which one makes the most sense for you to write on, given that you're not doing this thing for search, you're not doing this thing for SEO purposes, you're not trying to tick a box or, you know, ensure that you get another content piece published the next week?
Yeah, good question. I would say it's a combination of two things. The first is pain that I felt myself. Like, what has been difficult for me? What have I been struggling with? What have I been pulling my hair out over? Anything like that tends to be a good topic, particularly if we sort of figure it out, right? Everybody's looking for solutions to problems. We have problems in our business that we haven't figured out. And sometimes I write about those even just to kind of vent. But I think I know that I have something if I have a pain point, and then we sort of figure out something that works really well. That is certainly one. A second one would just be, I probably don't use social media as well as I should, but I use social media looking for signal in terms of what to write about. And I mentioned this global sales tax compliance topic. That is something that there was a number of reasons we wrote a bunch of content around it, but one was I was on Twitter every single day seeing founders be like, how do we handle global sales tax compliance? Like, what are the options? What do I need to know? And when you just see the same thing being asked over and over and over, and nobody seems to be terribly knowledgeable on the topic, there's an obvious opportunity there. And that's one where, especially in the context of like Twitter or social media in general, people are asking these questions, and because it's social media, they're getting these very kind of snippety short responses, hundreds of these sort of snippety short responses from people on a topic that's very, very dense and nuanced. And that sort of said to me, okay, there's an opportunity here to go deep on this topic, to help people understand this, and sort of fill this knowledge gap that's obviously there. So social media signal, pain that I have experienced myself. And I would say the third one is more along the lines of inspiration or idealism, to be honest with you. So I would say, and this is a whole nother topic, but the way that we're building out Seta is very different from how most tech companies are built. It's kind of idealistic. We do some very weird things in terms of how we distribute equity and how we pay people. And those things come from my heart and how I want to run this company and the type of businesses that I want to see in the world. I think I write about those things because they are meaningful to me. And I'm making a bet that if these things are meaningful to me, they might not be, again, great SEO keywords or whatnot, but there's going to be some small segment of people out there that feel the way that I do and are inspired by these ideas or these topics. So those would be the three, I would say, sort of inspiration, pain, or just social media signal. That's typically where I get ideas from.
Okay, so given that you're the one writing all the content, and we are going to try to dig into your writing workflow and process, we've gotten ideation out of the way, but before we go into that, have you ever thought of outsourcing any of this for like someone else to write? Has it ever happened that you outsource any of this and say, okay, I think this is something I could outsource, maybe a studio or a content marketer to like pen it down for me?
Yeah, good question. I have fairly strong opinions on this topic and a lot of bias, I guess, because my background is in writing. I think there's absolutely a time and place for outsourcing anything in business, content included. There are content agencies that I think extremely highly of. There are content agencies I've worked with before. And I think there's a ton of businesses where the founders don't have experience in content creation. They have expertise in other areas, and it makes total sense to outsource. All of that being said, my bias is for building internal content teams. And the reason that I say that is for content to really stand out, I think there needs to be a depth of understanding of your market, your industry, whatever it might be, that is difficult at times for an external agency to have. Even the ones that try really, really hard, it's just tough to learn all these different industries across all these different clients, even if you are really great at creating content. So another way I would frame that is, I think a lot of the core ideas of what you write about or what you make videos about or podcast about needs to come from internal expertise at the company. And agencies can certainly play a huge role in making sure that content is presented well and distributed well and written well, or the videos are edited well, or whatever it might be. I don't want to diminish that, but I do kind of think that it benefits companies if they are going to take content seriously to say, this is not something that we can just completely outsource and sort of punt on responsibility for. We need to be here showing up at the table when it comes to content strategy, when it comes to content creation. We need to have like a really vested role in it. That is my opinion. I think a lot of people, I've had this conversation with a lot of other founders, and I like to bring it back if I'm talking to technical founders, to product development and like hiring outsourced engineers. And if you talk to like a CTO of most tech companies, they will very quickly be like, oh no, we need to build the product internally. This is our engine. This is the baby of our company. We're not just going to outsource it and just let someone else build the product and worry about other things. And I view it the same way. Certainly, you know, the product might be what you're selling, but if content is your acquisition strategy, you need to take it seriously. You need to take it seriously. And working with an agency makes total sense, but you're not off the hook. You can't sort of just hire an agency and let that be your content strategy.
Well, you know, this is your response is, you know, is that if when I was starting my career, when I was building this studio initially, you know, if I hear a response like this, the rebellious part of me would start, you know, jumping off and saying, hey, because it sounds like, hey, it's going to dig into my business and all that. But I totally understand that because, of course, you know, using myself, for instance, if I'm exploring a product like Outsetter, for instance, and I want to read content pieces that would educate me on which of the options I should choose. Trust me, and I'm very, very frank about this. I'd rather I read a content piece by you, knowing very well that is building the product, so he knows the insight, he has the experience. I would not, like, a part of me would not really resonate with the content piece that maybe I just go to a website and I see it was written by Outsetter team. That signal in me would be like, oh, maybe an agency wrote this, maybe a freelancer there that they outsourced to maybe someone in Nigeria or Pakistan or somewhere wrote this. And, you know, there's that thinking, maybe because I'm a marketer and I'm a writer, that would make me feel like, okay, who is actually the person behind this content? So I think there is a place, like you said, for agencies and studios like Costco. Content is not something that should be completely outsourced, especially when you consider the fact that that agency they are equally trying to grow their business. And them growing their business means having as much customers as they can, which means, you know, dividing their focus and then treating content like a checkbox that is a set of deliverables they have to send across yep. to you every month or every week, their checks signed and all that. So I completely agree with that. And we'll revisit that, and maybe it will be a little pitch like for me, and maybe share some ideas on how we're able to navigate that. But before that, you know, let's stay on you, because I'm learning so much from what you're sharing, and I believe everybody that's going to listen to this is going to be learning so much too. Now let's look at how you actually write content, because you know, like you're a very busy founder. You could take one of these ideas, like you have, for instance, this tax content piece you wrote, and I saw it was so long, like it's about 19 minutes to read. And trust me, unless someone that is very invested, they don't want to put out 19 minutes to read a content piece.
Yep.
How do you write? Like, because I'm always looking to improve the way I and my team write content for people like you. I want to know, how do you write? Like, ideation is out of the picture. You found this idea. Now it's time to write. Right. Tell us, like, walk us through how you write. How do you sit down and write?
Yeah, let me just a note on length, and then I'll get into the actual writing process. To your point, most of the content that we write is what I would call very long form, meaning these are articles that are 3,000 to 8,000 words. They take 10 to 25 minutes to read. And to your point, you know, you hear so much about attention spans shrinking and whatnot. I think all of that is true. This is kind of us being like, we're going to zig when others zag. And I know for a fact that these long articles are read, you know, a minuscule amount compared to some of these posts that you see on Twitter that are two sentences long. But the bet that we are making is by building an audience that cares, you know, if 80 people read this article instead of 8, but they take the time to invest 20 minutes into this topic, we've built that much more credibility with those 80 people. So that's the long and short behind the long form content in general. But getting back to your question on process, I also don't have too much of a magical process. People ask me all the time, they're like, what's your content calendar look like? Like, how do you sort of organize your thoughts before you start writing? I have no content calendar. I start with a blank page. What I have when I start is some spark of inspiration. Like, I sit down to write when I feel like I need to write right now. And I try to vomit on the page, for the lack of a better word. I try to just like get down as many of my thoughts as I possibly can. Typically, oftentimes I will have a story of some sort in mind that I want to start with, or that's driving me to write this piece in general. It could be something happening in the context of our business. It could be something I learned through another SaaS founder. But oftentimes that story sort of kicks things off, and I'll actually use it as the intro in a lot of cases. And then from there, I do very, I would say, sort of basic outlines as I write. So I write in a Google Doc, nothing fancy whatsoever. I would say I start writing. As I start writing, I'm the type of person that tends to like almost look forward as I'm writing. And I say, okay, there's these like three or four topics or main points that I want to make sure I cover. So I'll jot those down. And those usually become sort of headings within the article, and give it some structure. And from there, I can build out each of the sections in greater depth. I definitely, in most instances, will write a first draft of an article end to end, and then I try to leave it alone. I'm a big believer in getting your thoughts down and then walking away for a little bit. And what I find with the articles I'm most excited to write is it's difficult for me to stay away. I'll go upstairs and hang out with my family and try to say I'm not going to touch this thing for 2 days, but I continue to think about it incessantly. And the more that I have that feeling, the more I know I'm writing on a topic that I should be covering. And the more ideas kind of come to mind, and I'm like racing back down to my computer to try to get all these additional thoughts out and clarify my thinking and edit to make everything make more sense and better reflect the thoughts going on in my head. So that's kind of the writing process itself. Then there's really just two other things, I guess. Aside from editing, I do my own copy editing as well, which there's pros and cons to that, but that's just really because we're a small team. I try to go into every article and pull out some pull quotes. There's nothing, you know, fascinating about that either, but I always think in the context of most articles, there's going to be some soundbite of some sort that is just a short articulation of what the article is all about or captures a point really well. Sometimes it might be just a sentence I wrote that is sharing my thinking that I think conveys my point succinctly. Other times it could be I interviewed somebody and they made a really great point and I want to call that out as a quote. But quotes are sort of one of the finishing steps. And then the last one is just imagery. And this, I think point blank, this is the single biggest missed opportunity in content creation. So many people talk about like, we need to invest money to create really high quality content. We need to invest money to distribute really high quality content. We need to hire SEO agencies to build links to our content. There's a million different ways you can spend money on content, but a really, really inexpensive one is just creating good visuals to go with your content. Like, make sure the social media images are nice. Make sure there's, you know, good imagery throughout the article. It makes it more visually interesting. It's not very expensive to do if you start looking around and finding illustrators, or you can use things like Midjourney today, whatever it might be. And just by doing that, so few people really invest in the imagery in their articles that you can immediately like get yourself into the top 10% of content creators just by your stuff looking good. And it's so easy to do. I think more people should do that. So that's kind of the final step for me. Once I've got kind of the pull quotes, the imagery, I go through, do a final edit and hit publish.
So do you do that? Do you take care of the designs for those imagery too? Do you do that yourself?
I'm not particularly artistic when it comes to design related stuff or illustrations or whatnot. So I do not do the images myself. We've used a combination of tactics to do this. I have not played with the AI stuff much yet. Like, I have not used Midjourney or anything like that to create images for our content, but I think increasingly that's going to be a strategy that makes a ton of sense. I mean, you see some of the images being created with Midjourney today, and they're interesting, they're vivid, they're unique. I think if you take the time to train AI on, you know, styles that work for your brand and whatnot, that's going to increasingly be a really good way to do this. But we have a designer on our team now. His name is James. For most of our posts, I will go to James and I'll say, I've written this article. Here's the draft in Google Docs. We need a hero image. We need maybe 2-3 other images that convey whatever I'm trying to convey. And sometimes I will get quite specific and say, like, I'm envisioning a picture in my head of blah, blah, blah. One example, we wrote a post on SaaS churn, and I literally said, like, I want to see a sailboat like out in the ocean, and there's a huge wave coming towards it that's about to sink it, and it says SOS churn on the side of the boat. Like, sometimes I'll be very descriptive and then I let the designer or artistic person take it from there. Other times I'm much more open-ended, depending on sort of what I envision in my head, I guess. But it's either just like a graphic or visual designer, or we've hired illustrators quite a bit as well too. I think it's one of the easiest ways to sort of define your style and stand out online is take the time, go on Fiverr, go on Upwork, go on any of these sites, find an illustrator whose style that you like and make that the style of your brand. And when you you know, have something that you've written, you can kind of throw it over the fence to the illustrator and say, we need imagery for this. There's a ton of talented people out there dying for opportunities like this. It's just an easy problem to solve and really helps you stand out.
Wow. Like, you know, I was getting so excited thinking you're going to end like your whole process without mentioning AI. Then I spoiled the phone by asking you how you do with imagery, and then you started mentioning AI. Like, it's super interesting to hear someone talk about their content production workflow, that the obsession always comes with ensuring that the content gets written. And then it's like I'm trying to picture myself in that situation where you have an idea to write content, you start writing, and then you say, okay, let me give this 2 more days or 1 more day, and then you can't just take your mind off it. You're always going back to your typewriter, your keyboard, and you keep typing away until you get the content out of your head. So super relevant. I think it happens most times when you have something like burning in you that you really want to express it, and each time you take your mind off it, it keeps pulling you back to go back and write. So for somebody listening to this, I think if we're going to pick one thing from what Geoff has said there, is if you're going to write, even if you're a CEO or a marketing executive that's very, very busy, you should find those ideas where if you don't write about it, you cannot sleep, or you just can't take your mind off it. I think that would be like the best inspiration for you to get content actually written and, you know, crossing that task off. So that has been very, very, very relevant, Joe. Like I said, I'm equally learning from you. Now, there's something you said about when you want to start writing, that, you know, you always like to start with a story, and then you try to get some kind of outline, and then you start typing away. I think that's relevant. And like I said before, I'm going to share this, because when we, for instance, as a studio, realize that, okay, yes, there is still a place for SEO content, and there's still a place to try and, you know, dominate the search terms and all that, when we realize that most of, at a certain time, some of the customers that we were, some of the clients we were working with, realized that even when we did all the work and got their content to rank high, you know, it was generating traffic, but there was still nothing to show for it. So, you know, this initial excitement, like, hey, once we get the content to rank high, we are going to drive business. And then you manage to get the content to drive the rank high. You, as the studio or as the agency, you want to start celebrating. Hey, in 6 months, we're able to strategize, write these few content pieces, and we did this, we did this trick, we did that trick. Now this content is outranking this company. It's outranking this company. Now it's on the number one position. And then you start waiting, because initially the conversation is always sweet. The founder or the marketing leader who is working directly with you is happy. They start applauding you. But 1 year down the line, they realize, they start asking questions like, okay, we've been paying you for 1 year, and yes, we've been ranking, yes, we've been driving traffic, but seriously, we've not really had anything to show for all this, you know, traffic and all this thing that we've been getting. It was at that point that, now, personally, I had that light bulb switch that, okay, we are not going to do this anymore. We have to switch what we are doing to crafting content that people would actually want to read. Like, I don't care if it ranks, but if you're going to work with us, then we should first and foremost figure out how we are going to distribute the content, because we are not going to sit for 1 year writing content that we are waiting for it to rank. Like, that's going to be like the ticket on the mint. So what we did, and I think maybe relevant to you, is the first thing we did is we tried to look at what were those things that was making us focus on SEO. So we looked at the SEO brief, which was like the first thing we had to tear and throw out of our window. Where when you want to go to write content, you use Ahrefs on SEMrush, and then you scrape all the keywords, all the related keywords, and your obsession becomes how you're going to force these keywords into the content before even figuring out the story. So like you said, what you do first is try to get the story right. So what we did is we came up with what we call story briefs and outline, kind of keys into what you said, where you say lead with a story that the target reader would actually want to care about enough to read, and then create an outline that would ensure that that story is directed in a, that is kind of guided in a way that you can still say you want to still share your story, but the outline guides you in creating content that will find a way to bring in your product into the argument. So I don't know how much of a reader that you are, but I think I'm going to share that with you after this call, and maybe I'll put that in the show notes for anybody that is listening now, that if you want to take the path that Geoff is taking, and I recommend it for any founder, I recommend it for any company, where you want to write on things that you really care about, or take signals, like listen to signals on social media like Geoff does, and write content pieces that are going to answer questions that your ICPs are actually asking. Yes, you're going to lead with the story, but it still makes sense that you should have some kind of guide to ensure that the story you're going to come up with is guided towards bringing in your product in a way that is not like forcing it down the reader's throat, but it's interesting for them to want to go and explore. So we created this thing we call story briefs and outlines, where we say, okay, throw your like obsession out of the window, focus on stories your target readers want to read, and then use this kind of approach, create an outline that will help you pour out those ideas and those stories into like a blank page and make somebody like want to read and still be of benefit to your own company. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Geoff. I know to respect your time, I could go on and on, because I've taken down like more than 15 questions already. You've been so generous with your time. So you're gonna end the show today. But before we do, final words from you and from maybe where the audience can find you.
Yeah. Final words from me. I would just say most people listening to this probably don't need me to tell them it, but content works. I really think content can work in the context of any business. As we've discussed, I do think it tends to be a longer term strategy, although there are things you can do to get benefit from content right away. To make it successful is take the drudgery out of it and lean into the things, lean into your own sort of unique abilities, right? So we live in this age of YouTube and podcasting, and I'm writing long form blog content. And that is just a reflection of my skill set and how I express myself best. But I think if you kind of stack the cards in your favor in that way, creating content becomes a lot less of a task and much more something that you can do sustainably. So that's probably my biggest piece of advice. Like, find the format that works for you. Find a way to create content that keeps you excited, because sort of the summary of this whole session is, if you're excited about the work, if you're excited about the content, I really believe that the end reader gets that. They feel that. It comes through. Whereas if, creating content is a task that's outsourced to somebody without expertise and whatnot, that comes through too. So make sure what's shining through the content is felt by the reader. That would be my biggest, or view, or whatever it might be. That would be my biggest piece of advice. And in terms of where you can find me, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn. My name is spelled funny. I'm a Geoff, but it's G-E-O-F-F Roberts. So you can find me either place, or check out Outsetta at outsetta.com.
All right. Thank you so much. So